The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. Good evening to you. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder if this is the most unique time in American history that we're living through, the most unique time God has ever allowed. Possibly, my friend, possibly. Certainly the days of Lincoln and the Civil War would also be in the running. Speaking of which, breaking news, an important historical clarification, and you heard it here first. You know all about, and you've heard this for years, you've heard this since grade school, the assassination of President Lincoln, how he was shot in the Ford Theater by John Wilkes Booth. Well, new additional details about Lincoln's death have been uncovered. It seems the bullet alone did not claim the president's life. He died of COVID-19. Now, fantastic as that sounds, we have something even more amazing in present-day America. One alleged whistleblower who claims to overhear a phone call from President Trump, a man who won't even come forward, won't give his name, won't testify, and what happens? The president gets impeached by the Democrats. Meanwhile, 1,000 whistleblowers describe election fraud with sworn affidavits under penalty of perjury, many of whom have already come forward publicly on television and given their names under threats of their lives. And the reaction of the Democrats? The reaction of the mainstream media? Oh, nothing to see here. So far, I haven't seen a stick of evidence. Well, there is something to see here. And here to tell you all about it is National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg.
Well, Bob, thanks for that introduction. And once again, glad to be here. I would have to say something, and I regret to say it, but you know, given some of the editorial stances National Review has taken, I'm not as proud of being a National Review contributor as I used to be, I have to tell you.
Well, I just say that to make you sound good,
okay,
Mike,
thanks.
Because there's some people out there that may still think National Review's a good magazine.
They still have some very good
quality
writers.
But they've been never Trumpers for the most part. But you have not been, so you're a significant voice on National Review.
Yes.
And lately, I don't know that I've been all that wild about the Wall Street Journal either. They don't seem to be caring much about this election fraud either.
You've heard me talk about this before, but there's an underlying issue. And the underlying issue that's been bringing a lot of the money into the race and influencing how especially business has been going has been the trade issue in China. A lot of the business people, big corporations, and a lot of the people that are probably sit on the editorial board in Wall Street Journal do not like President Trump's policies on trade.
I'm really thinking that had so much to do with this because I think China knew what they were doing when they released this virus. They may not have invented it for biological warfare, but they certainly knew that they had it. They knew it was going out. They knew how it would affect Trump. And I believe that this really has been part of a plot.
They purposely brought it into the United States, and
knowing how the Democrats and the media
how far the Democrats are able to run with it probably exceeded the Chinese communists' wildest expectations. I mean, they are just.
But I'm sure it occurred to them that it might get President Trump not elected.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It what the Democrats ran with COVID-19.
Yeah. The Chinese may not have thought we'd shut our whole stupid country down. Maybe even they didn't know the Democrats would be that stupid. But I think to at least get Trump out of office, I think they were trying to do that.
Well, they were. They were hoping. But the Democrats just they saw it. They never let a good crisis go to waste. And they did it. And they were able to radically expand the base of a potential fraud by millions and millions and millions. Tens of millions of votes they were able to expand it by.
And what bothers me, Mike, and I've said this so often, they couldn't do that without the weak-kneed Republicans. It is, again, what I call the battered wife syndrome. The Democrats are the abusive husband, and a lot of the Republicans are the battered wife saying, oh, well, maybe we should just go along, and maybe we shouldn't resist too much. And that's not true of all the Republicans, but it's sure been true of a lot of them, and we're seeing an awful lot of that right now. I don't have a whole lot of faith that these Republican legislatures in some of these states, and they are Republican legislatures that could overturn this by looking what our Constitution actually says about the Electoral College. I don't have a whole lot of faith that they're going to do it.
Bob, it's hard to look at history and their current behavior and have a lot of faith. I have to agree with
that. I have faith in God. Like I keep saying, yes. God could do a miracle. God could work on their hearts, but on the human trajectory, I do not trust them to do the right thing at all. Now, the more there's public pressure, the more there are protests. They are politicians, and they listen to that. But then that's where the mainstream media comes in. They're not getting this out here. You and I are talking about this tonight. We're a local show. There are national shows that talk about this, but not a lot, not compared to what's going on with the mainstream media. And the people that are watching CNN, NBC, ABC, PBS, they don't think any of this has happened because they're told that Trump's Fox has not been very good. There's Judge Jeanine, Lou Dobbs. There's been a few, Jesse Walters, but
the pundits are covering it.
Tucker, but boy, last week there were two whole shows where Tucker didn't even mention it, and it was right on the days when Giuliani was first going and talking to the state legislatures, and Sean had been talking about it a lot less, and I'm noticing the last few nights he keeps going out of his way. I remind you, I don't answer to anybody. I'm independent. I get the feeling he got a lot of flack, and he's kind of reacting. Well, I'm glad he's reacting, but he seems kind of defensive. Laura Ingraham's been kind of hit and miss with it. So yeah. I've been very disappointed in Fox, but there have been a few. Lou Dobbs is Maria Bartiromo. She's been one of the best.
So those folks have done coverage, but the news organization has not. And the news organization, here they have a wealth of depositions, of witnesses, of things happening. You would think that any news organization worth its salt would go out there and be investigating. Well, they haven't been investigating. The Fox News has not done one bit of investigative reporting. So basically, they are 100% sided with CNN, MSNBC. Sure, they're letting the talking heads, talk about it, but the news organization's not been doing
it. Their fan base is bleeding over to Newsmax and OAN, and hopefully Fox will start taking note of that. I heard that a couple of weeks ago, they pulled Jeanine Pirro off the air because they knew what she was going to say about the election and that there was so much of a protest that they put her back on the week after. So, folks, if you've been disillusioned in Fox, let them know how you're feeling. That's the only thing these people listen to is their fan base, their ratings, their money, the money talks.
So in spite of the blackout and the effort to ignore all the evidence by the mainstream media, which now we have to sadly include Fox into, is the polling has shown that, roughly 50% of the country believes that there is a lot of fraud and they are not confident in these election results. And most importantly, recently a couple polls came out in Georgia. The Trafalgar poll came out and showed that 53% of the voters in Georgia feel the election was compromised to the point that the wrong person was chosen to be the winner. That's 53%. And another 8% aren't sure. Only 37% felt confident that the right person won the race.
And that's especially ironic in as much as they have a Republican governor, a Republican secretary of state, and a Republican legislature in Georgia. And yet this stuff is still going on. What is with this governor? Trump went in there and got that guy elected.
Yep.
That boy, that's gratitude for you.
They have the establishment there, and you have to have the people that a lot of people that are in office do not have the courage of their convictions. They're in office to be in office, and you really can't rely upon them when the media's as against it is as it is. So they're terrified of the media. They're frightened. They don't want to be stepping out. And I mean, we've never seen anything like this. I mean, they didn't cover the whole business with Joe Biden and the corruption with his son. They completely blacked that out. They're blacking this out, and it's being ridiculed. So these people, they're you know, there's always going to be a minority of politicians that are willing to stand up. And that's the truth with the Republicans as well. So we're seeing it right now. However, we have seen the Georgia state legislature start to turn around based upon public pressure. And maybe Arizona might turn around based upon public pressure. We saw Pennsylvania, the leaders of the Pennsylvania state legislature kind of turned around, and where they put out a statement, it was after the fact, after they certified the legislators and sent them out, saying, we want our congressional delegation to oppose the seating of these electors. So you are starting to see some movement based upon public polling, but the time is short. And from a human perspective, you know, the odds look a little bit long.
And to be fair, in some cases, these politicians may have threats on their lives, too. I know politicians think like politicians, and they worry about the New York Times editorial page. But you look at the Supreme Court, for example, and they're not going to be running for any kind of reelection. I believe I'm listening to so many people saying, oh, we have Amy Coney Barrett's in there and Alito. But who knows what kind of pressure they are under. So, folks, if you're a praying person, pray that God protects the people and gives courage to people and causes people to do what I loved what Giuliani was challenging the congressman to do. He says, you have got to be willing to not be elected again to do the right thing for this country, to do the right thing for the future of democracy. And he's trying to give them a sense of shame to say, look at how history's going to look at you, assuming history survives, and don't just live in the moment. That's what we have to pray God does with everybody.
I concur, Bob. By speaking of Rudy Giuliani, you did hear that he's come down with COVID-19.
I did not hear that. I'm sorry.
Well, he tested for it. He was on this morning with Maria Bartiromo, and I can't say he looked particularly terrible, but shortly afterwards it was announced he had it, so also please pray for him. He's been out there working really hard. He's 76 years old. I mean, what a patriot and a workhorse he has been.
Yeah, and this is where those of you out there that are Christians, we won't get much into it tonight, but what the Bible would call spiritual warfare. There are evil powers behind the curtain that probably don't want to see America remain a free country, because the Bible says that a free country is more conducive to the spreading of the gospel.
So here's where we're at. Right now, Joe Biden is being given 306 electoral votes by the establishment. President Trump, the campaign, and a lot of his supporters are contesting that. So what needs to happen is we need to get him back down below 270. To do that, somehow we need a combination of three states. If we can get Wisconsin back to at least neutral, if not for Trump, but at least back to neutral, so that they're decertifying the election, and Georgia and Arizona, then he's down to 269. That would do it. That would throw it to the House. If we can get Wisconsin, Georgia, and Michigan, Biden drops to 264. And then if we can get Wisconsin, Georgia, and Pennsylvania, well, Biden drops all the way down to 260. So we need some combination of three states to drop him down. And so, you know, there's ways to do that. Obviously, the idea is to get the state legislators to, you know, basically say, hey, we want to send electors for Trump. But that's something that the Supreme Court would have to decide upon. And that's something we can talk about when
okay.
we get back.
You'll show us the path to how they plan to pull this off when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Thank you.
Bob Siegel's fantasy novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, is now available on Kindle, Nook, and in print copy. Check out some of the wonderful customer reviews on Amazon.com. Reviews such as this one. Wow, what an incredible story. Well-written, believable characters. The story takes twists and turns that keep surprising the reader. Although it is written from the perspective of a preteen, it is most appealing to an adult. Takes one back to those feelings and longing for adventure. I can't wait for the sequel. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. So, Mike, there are six states being contested: Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan. Do you believe that in reality, legally, Trump won all six of them? Or do you believe he won most of them? If I were to guess, I'd say possibly Nevada's up in the air, but they found so much fraud there, I'm thinking he may have even won Nevada.
I think there's good evidence that he won Nevada. I think that there's a case that he might have even won Minnesota, really. Actually.
Oh, boy. They're not even going
they're
to
be contesting that. They can only do so much.
Yeah,
okay.
That's true.
But
I know people in California that think he might have won California. They've been cheating for years.
I don't believe that he won California. I'm just not going to go there. I can't go that far.
Well, I'm not saying we have to go there. I'm just saying
I know some people that
yes, are thinking that. And yes. Although a lot of the people that would have voted him got out of California a long time ago.
I wouldn't
ago.
Be surprised if he got a few more votes
but
in California.
But when's the last time we had a fair election here in California? Who knows what people are really voting for?
But did he win Wisconsin? Yes. Did he win Michigan? Yes. Did he win Pennsylvania? Yes. Did he win Georgia? Certainly. And Arizona, I believe as well. So
it's hard to believe he lost Arizona. I was so surprised when they called that. And that was on Fox News where they called that so early.
So, yeah. So where we are is we do need some state legislators to step up. Rudy Giuliani's been talking about that as the primary strategy, as getting these state legislators to step forward. Now, I believe one of the reasons he's doing that, I don't think he's completely discounting the courts, but he doesn't want to be walking around publicly saying, we have a chance in the courts. He wants to keep the pressure on the state legislatures. It's up to you. You have got to do it.
Well, and the thing is, let's assume the state legislators do the right thing. Won't that get sued and taken to the courts anyway?
We have so many people
that don't really care.
It would
what
go
the
to the Supreme Court anyway. The Supreme Court would have to say, yes, this is legitimate. You can do it.
All they have to do is read that section in the Constitution that says it's the job of the legislatures to pick the electors.
I believe that the conservative majority would certainly rule in favor of that. And so we now have to get them to do and go against the mainstream media, which is implacably against this, and the pressure has to be brought on. So something's going to have to happen in the next few days. Now, with that said, even though Rudy Giuliani has lately been talking about the legislators, there's still a chance the Supreme Court could come through. I don't know what form it would take. I mean, I do believe that many of them have been watching what's been going on here. And if you're on the Supreme Court, you're a pretty smart person. All those conservative justices are very smart people. They know what the Democrats have been saying about packing the court. They know that the Democrats are planning and destroying the country as being a constitutional democracy, constitutional republic. So I've got to think that they are looking for a way to get these cases in there, stay within their judicial philosophy of conservatism, originalism, and do something to protect the republic. I do believe they want to do that. So I can't believe they would just sit there and allow this to pass and let the because they're talking about letting the Supreme Court be destroyed. If they do nothing, they're basically saying, hey, we're going to let the Supreme Court be destroyed.
Yeah, I suppose we could hope that even if the court members are thinking only of their own self-interests and survival, they'll want to do that. But you never know how they're going to rule.
Well, I mean, the court, they would just become another sort of almost a super legislative body or a panel appointed by the legislator that's under their control. So they would lose all their independence. The Supreme Court would be dead as we know it. And I really believe the people we have up there, the conservatives, really love the Constitution. They love our former country. They care about it. And I think they care about the country. Now, they have all the other forces working against
them.
They
have a lot of pressure. And I think sometimes after they go through the ringing that the Democrats put them through, they want to prove that they're objective. And unfortunately, today, proving your objective means not always being conservative and going with the liberals. That certainly seems to be the art that Roberts mastered.
Yes, he did. So there is, as I said, it's from a human perspective, the odds look a bit long right now. But let's remember that, first of all, between 75 and 76 million people, even though it's only showing 74, voted for Donald Trump. And they came out and that he won a significant electoral election vote. And that was after all the media, all the establishment did everything they could to destroy President Trump over the last 4 or 5 years with all the media blackouts,
and that's
all the propaganda.
And impeachment and the Mueller investigation. So when you think of that, you do think maybe God has his hand on this guy and he's going to survive this too.
Right. So, and I think in the Bible, a lot of times that God will work in such a way that it makes it real clear it was him. You can't sit there and say, "Oh yeah, we had this in the bag."
Yeah.
Right now, I'm not sitting here going,
"God likes to come in at the last minute.
We've got this in the bag, Bob."
Well, God likes to show us that it had to be him. A lot of people have been comparing this with the story of Esther, because this man Haman was just about to destroy the Jews, and the lid got blown off his plot right at the end of the story, and then he got hung in his own gallows.
So,
and they lived happily ever after, Mike.
So, you know, just, and I did cover this heavy duty the last time I was on and talking about just basically as what we talked about in the show before the election, all the indicators said Trump was going to win. Well, after the election, every indicator said Trump won.
Exactly what you predicted on the show happened until they stopped counting the votes on Tuesday night, all at the same time. An incredible coincidence, and then you wake up in the morning and somehow Biden's ahead.
Then they continued counting
Give
in the dark of the
break.
Night. They continued in the dark of the night. So the thing is that even after all the illegal vote counting, the statistics show every place other than the votes, the statistics show that Trump won. For example, he won 18 out of 19 bellwether counties. These counties had been accurate in predicting who the president was going to be 100% since 1980. One of them, Vigo County, had been accurate since 1952, and Trump won that one again. So he only lost one county of those bellwether counties this time around. So those predicted he won. The pivot counties, the ones that Obama won in 2008 and 2012, that Trump took back most of them. He won overwhelmingly one of those counties. In fact, he increased his lead in the pivot counties. That's 206 counties across the country. He increased his lead by 1.2 percentage points over what he did over Hillary Clinton.
Well, that's plus the obvious. Trump has over 10,000 people at his rallies. I'm not even making this up. There have been times that Biden had five people show up, and then they would count the reporters to make it look like more than five. And I know that it was mostly a vote against Trump and not for Biden, but still, they keep this guy locked up for the last 6 months and they won't let him talk. Why were they doing that? Because they weren't worried. In their minds, they had the election in the bag, and the best thing they could do is just keep Biden locked up and not let him go out and say things, because it didn't really matter. They were going to win anyway. I think that's very obvious.
I think, first of all, that's correct. I think they were surprised by how many votes Donald Trump pulled in. So they had to do things very slipshod. But in the end, it doesn't seem to matter. I mean, the establishment Republicans are afraid to do anything. So right now, they are probably thinking they got away with it. But there's still some uncertainty there. Somebody who was bringing this up? Richard Barris is bringing up the fact that you know, when you have a new administration coming in like this, you have the top people vying for the top positions, like Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, things like that. Well, they've only had mediocre, very mediocre candidates trying to get these positions. So the theory on that is that there's still some people, the higher level people, they're still thinking this could go the wrong way, and they don't want to be associated with it.
Surely you're not calling John Kerry a mediocre candidate for the cabinet. I mean, you know, he served in Vietnam, you know, Mike. He reminded us of that.
He also, I believe,
did he get
a Purple Heart as well?
He got a Purple Heart. I served in Vietnam. I mean, I've never seen a more exciting candidate in my life. So let's not belittle John Kerry.
No, he was the integrity candidate. That was the candidate that on his mom's deathbed, he told the story, is this touching story, that on her deathbed, she reached up and she grabbed him. John, integrity. Then she died.
And because of that, everybody should have voted for him. So, he also had a plan for Iraq, but he wasn't going to tell us what the plan was unless he got elected. Yeah. Anyway, we digress, but I just couldn't let that go by. Yeah.
So here's something just to remind you that in this election cycle, we saw 450,000 Biden-only votes in the swing states we're talking about. So there was 98,000 of these Biden-only votes in Pennsylvania and a current margin of about 46,000. There was 80 to 90,000 of these Biden-only votes in Georgia, a current margin of about 12,000. There was 4,200 of the Biden-only votes in Arizona. That may have changed since then, with only about a 10,000 vote margin. Then there was 69,000 to 115,000 Biden-only votes in Michigan. And we're talking a current margin of about 156,000. And then we have 62,000 Biden-only votes in Wisconsin with a current margin of 22,000. These Biden-only votes are highly irregular. In fact, when you do a statistical analysis and you add everything up, it's just this side of impossible that he won, given all the statistics, all the county results, all the bellwether counties. For example, in Ohio and when you talk about, Midwestern states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, they always swing the same direction as Ohio and Iowa. So Ohio and Iowa, Trump did better than last time, yet they swang the opposite direction. That's how they always swing. Ohio also swings with Florida. And current totals show that Trump should have won these states. Every statistic other than these vote totals coming out of these heavily urban areas under Democrat control, out of these massive counting centers like the TCF Center in Pennsylvania, right? Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This center where they consolidated all the voting places together and the fraud there that was going on that's being reported and being documented by people is off the charts. We're talking about anywhere between 144,000 and 280,000 votes being brought in from New York by that postal worker, that truck driver who brought them in, and they drove them to Lancaster. Then the truckload of these filled out ballots disappeared on October 29th, just a few days before the election. That's enough to swing the vote. We're talking 60, 70,000 votes in that Georgia. Apparently, those suitcases were big enough to hold tens and tens of thousands of votes being counted in the dead of the night. So all these things add up that it just seems the evidence is overwhelming. And you know what? I knew in 2008, as much as I didn't like him, I knew that President Obama won.
Yeah, I did too. I was very disappointed, but I really believe that our country had been brainwashed, and I believe they truly voted for him. That's not what's going on this time.
And likewise in 2012, I was confident that he won
with
again.
That abysmal campaign Romney ran, I have no doubt that Obama legitimately won that election. There may have also been cheating, but not enough to make a difference. Obama really won. That's not what's going on with Biden.
But right now, to my very soul, to the core of my being, I do not believe that Biden won this race. I believe Donald Trump won by a substantial margin. He won by bigger margins than he won in 2016.
I know that we can debate legalese and what's admissible in a court, but I think that's really been proven. Even the fact that they have so many more ballots than the amount of legitimately registered people, and they know how many dead people voted, and they know how many people had moved out of the county and voted. They have votes that they scanned more than once. They take one vote, they scan it against the machine again and again. They got votes that were supposed to have been mail-in, but they weren't even folded. The papers weren't even folded. Clean, straight sheets. It goes on and on and on. We know this was a massive fraud. They should just declare anything that came in after that evening when they chose to sign off, that was them conceding that Trump had won and they needed to circle the wagon. I'm not saying anyone's going to do that, but they should just call it right at that point.
We have tens of thousands of votes that came in before they were mailed. Before they were mailed. Which means that that was obviously fraudulent. They were misstated because of the operation, the fraud operation,
and
made
we
a
have
mistake.
A postal worker who said that he was ordered to post-date
right.
Things. Yeah, it's just...
Yes, we have potentially hundreds of thousands with eyewitness testimony talking about post-dating, actually backdating ballot request and ballot returns.
And we now have a video camera which shows it after they shoot all the Republican poll watchers out. They pull things out from under the table. And the only thing I'm hearing is, well, how do we know that was a box of votes that they pulled out? Oh, you're right. You're right. I'm sure they were pulling out a box of Hershey bars and having an evening snack because they just kicked everybody. All right, the Republican watchers are gone. We can have our snack now. This is ridiculous. Who would believe this stuff?
No, it's the evidence is overwhelming. The evidence, more evidence is accumulating all the time. As we were talking about before the show, we now have 1,000 affidavits of people have sworn under penalty of perjury, penalty of going to jail and receiving fines, that they saw substantial voter fraud. The fraud that we're talking about is at determinative levels. We're talking people have being eyewitness to hundreds of thousands of fraudulent ballots.
Yeah, and the media can't even play the race card because I'm seeing African-Americans and Hispanics and people from the Middle East. They're all among the people that are coming out and testifying. So they can't even play the race card. All they can do is bury their head in the sand like an ostrich and pretend it isn't happening.
Now, you probably did hear that they did get a ruling from a judge that they could grab the machines from Antietam County in Michigan and do a forensic analysis on 21 of the Dominion machines. So they're going to pull the images off there. That's very good news.
Good news as long as they don't have the FBI go and pull the Dominion machines. The FBI, where truth goes to die. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
This is Dana Ray, a reoccurring co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, here to tell you about Bob's novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. What kid could resist the chance to wish for anything he wanted, even if he knew he was flirting with certain danger every single time he made the wish? 12-year-old Mike Owens has received a special present from his eccentric Aunt Lorene, a magic Christmas ornament. The ornament functions as a kind of Aladdin's lamp, but with a unique twist. Each time Mike's wish is granted, something bad happens to a person who is with him at the time the wish was spoken. This, of course, sets up a chain reaction of trouble and adventure. Weighing his own desires against the consequences to those around him, Mike learns a valuable lesson about choices and personal responsibility while experiencing a nonstop adventure with extremely unusual turns. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com. and BarnesandNoble.com.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. I want you to get up right now. Stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Then we'll figure out what to do about the depression and the inflation and the oil crisis. Stick your head out and yell and keep yelling. I'm
mad as hell. I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listening to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Some of you will recognize that as the movie Network, written by the brilliant Russian playwright Paddy Chayefsky, and it was very predictive. They actually predicted the reality show before we had reality shows, and I know that you had a lot to say about that, Mike, because it's very apropos.
Well, is it 100% directly talking about every issue we're dealing with right now? Maybe not, but it's pretty close. And the theme on it, though, and I really believe this, we need to be mad. We have crooked politicians, corrupt media, left-wingers that are in the process of stealing the presidential election. They're locking down people, and that's what I want to talk about right now. I want to talk about the lockdowns. The lockdowns have been proven not only not to work, but they actually kill more people than they save. There's alternatives we could put in place, voluntary alternatives of people doing things voluntarily to protect themselves that will yield far less deaths and protect civil rights and protect people's livelihoods and protect their dreams. But right now, these lockdowns are going to be killing people. And guess what? We're going into the Christmas season. So what we have is Gavin Newsom locking down and destroying Christmas for people. And you know what one of the worst times of the year for people suffering depression and suicides is, Bob?
Christmas time.
So here we are. We're piling this on people right now at one of the times when people are the most vulnerable. This is crazy. And we cannot tolerate it. We cannot just sit around and allow this to happen. So this is life and death. People are dying because of these lockdowns. And you know, I guess what he's shooting for is that he can point to some total at the end, you know, with the vaccine coming, that maybe less people have died per 100,000 in California due to COVID-19, which, by the way, is a crock.
Well, they also just like an excuse to control our lives. This is the Gavin Wrench who stole Christmas. Let me say something out there to any of you who are running a restaurant or any establishment. If you plan to stay open, please contact me. I'll come out and give you my business.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was talking to somebody today that does parties. They've been destroyed by these lockdowns. All their business is gone. They're now getting a few people that have the guts to have a little party at their house, and they have had to let almost all their employees go. It just goes on
well,
and on.
They're talking about this is I haven't heard this from Newsom, but I'm hearing some of this. I've heard this in the past from the CDC and in other states. They're talking about how masks should be mandated inside the house too. Right. Are they, who's going to come checking? Is it going to be the KGB or is it going to be the Gestapo? Who's going to check on that?
Well. Anyway, the point of this is that we need to this has reached the point where we have to stand up, and I just say is you know there's a saying you know what if the government threw a war and nobody came? Well, what if Gavin Newsom threw a lockdown and nobody came? That's what we ought to be talking about.
I agree, Brendan. You had something to add.
I was just going to ask. Do you guys think martial law will actually go through? Because I've been getting letters from all my other places that I work at and saying like I'm an essential worker and stuff. So I was just wondering, do you guys think it might pass or no, not at all?
Martial law passed from the
So basically, you can only go out if you're an essential worker, and there's police everywhere. You have to show them a letter.
Well, we were under in California, at least back in April. They weren't calling it martial law, but it was. That's what it was for all intents and purposes.
Oh, okay. So are we going back to that?
Joe Biden is saying 100-day mandatory masks at all places, even when you step outside your door. So who knows? It's going to depend on who stays in power. If the Democrats pull this off and they run all three branches of government, who knows what they could do, Brendan?
So let's just talk about this lockdown. As probably many of you have read, the World Health Organization has actually come out against lockdowns. And the reason they came out against it is because under the lockdown procedures, people were being tossed into horrible poverty. Hunger's going up. People are starving. Now, we may not have that immediately here in the United States, but we actually do have an issue with hunger in this country right now that has been exacerbated by these lockdowns.
Well, there's all kinds of things. But the World Health Organization has gone back and forth. They were all for the lockdowns before.
They've now come out against it, solidly against it.
And Fauci goes forward, backwards, sideways, any way the wind blows, and people just act like he's some kind of god, and that once he's spoken, that's it.
So the idea is that you're going to mitigate the virus. And right now, of course, the idea, too, is that they're going to have our hospital swamped with these cases and people will not even be able to get the care they need because the hospitals will be full. So we went through this whole process, in the, April, May, June timeframe in, places like New York and New Jersey, and it didn't happen. We were able to have enough acute care facilities for people. There is resources. We can, we can still bring in the ships. So this is, they're using the exact same hysterical language we heard before. It's the same hysterical language. But one of the things that's changed, the average age of the person who's going into the hospital has dropped from 46 to 36. What that means is the people going to the hospitals are going in for far less serious conditions. They're not having to use the ICUs as much. So It's a different population that's not as vulnerable and not as at risk as the population was at the very beginning.
So you wouldn't know that listening to the news,
no.
Mike. You would hear that it's as bad as it's ever been.
No.
It's just as bad as it was back in March and April.
And you take a look at the cases, you see the cases are way up. They are up very high, but you don't see the same kind of death rates that you saw in most of the states of the country. Now, there are some states that are going to be impacted, and sad to say, this virus is contagious. It shows up as asymptomatic in a lot of people. 40, 50, some studies have shown 80%. So it's out there. So there are going to be some people that die from this virus.
Or they could die from something else, right. But they'll also have the virus. And a lot of times they're writing it down as a COVID.
Well, that goes to a study that Johns Hopkins University came out with last week.
And then they pulled that study off their website when they got a lot of flack.
So what it was showing is that in 2018, 2019, you had a death rate of about 7,700 people per day from all causes here in this country. And what they showed is so far in 2020, the death rate has not effectively changed. What they have shown is that as we've seen an increase in deaths associated or affiliated with COVID-19. We've seen a corresponding drops in deaths from heart disease, from respiratory disorders, from cancer. So what that seems to indicate is that a lot of these people
are
that
dying
would have died
of those other things, and they're marking it as COVID.
They're marking it as COVID.
And then they're saying, whoa, less people died of cancer this year.
Right. Well, that didn't happen. And probably more people died from cancer this year because they were not allowed to go to the hospital to get treated.
They weren't allowed to have screenings, treatments. There were certain operations and surgeries they weren't allowed to have. But we're not allowed to talk about any of that. Mike, COVID is the politically correct disease. Other diseases are not important anymore.
People died in their homes of heart attacks and didn't go to the hospital because the media and the healthcare officials had blown COVID-19 so out of proportion, they literally thought we were talking about Ebola.
And what about children, elementary school and toddler age, that need to be around sickness to develop the herd immunity? We're shutting down schools. I mean, it's just nightmarish what we're doing to the health of this country in the name of keeping us healthy.
Well, this has been utterly devastating for children. The anxiety attacks and psychological problems with children is skyrocketing in our country. Of course, we have rising domestic violence. We have domestic abuse. We have child abuse. All these things are on the rise. And we actually have people dying. So here's the thing is, even if by doing these lockdowns, we're able to slow the COVID-19 down a little bit, the net loss in lives from the lockdowns will more than make up for any lives saved by the lockdown. And that's the statistics show that.
And then the other thing is we know that keeping us safe is not their priority anyway. When we look at the fact that Governor Newsom goes out to a French restaurant after giving us orders to stay out of places like that, and it's going on around the country, governors, mayors, they obviously don't believe in this. They obviously don't take it seriously. These are the same people that were telling the police to stand down during the riots. Why should anybody believe them for a second when they say their agenda is to keep us safe? Their agenda is to promote their agenda with COVID as a Trojan horse.
Well, the mayor of Austin, Texas, was in Cabo, Mexico.
Oh, and did you like his apology? His apology. I apologize. It was a lapse in judgment. Oh, it was a lapse in judgment, all right, Mayor. Your lapse in judgment was that you didn't judge that you were going to get caught. That was your lapse of judgment.
I don't believe that Gavin Newsom is going to recover from this French Laundry thing. I mean, for people that were maybe not as skeptical as you or I, that woke them up, and they just said, you know, here he is with the head of the American Medical Association, with medical lobbyists, all these people who are preaching to us, you know, that we need to be locked down, and they're sitting there.
And they're some of the ones at the same table.
Right,
I know.
The exact same
and there's
table.
No masks. There's no social distancing. Yep. They're elbow to elbow. Well, I've never believed a word that came out of that guy's mouth. I've been following his career since he was the mayor of San Francisco. But if this wakes up more people, that would be wonderful.
So here's a few suggestions of maybe what you can do. First of all, go visit your friends. But when you go, if you get stopped, you know, and already talk to your parents and friends and say, listen, I'm going to do a protest. We're going to hang out in the yard and talk about politics, and we're going to protest the lockdown. Let them know that, because if you're protests are still okay.
Yeah, just say Black Lives Matter and I hate Trump and they'll leave you alone.
Well, you don't have to do that.
Make sure that's part of your protest.
You just let them know you're going to a protest. Or church.
Oh, but Mike, you don't understand. A conservative protest doesn't count as a legitimate First Amendment protest. It has to be a liberal, politically correct protest.
Well, I'm going to suspect that there's many police officers and deputy sheriffs in town here that aren't real excited about enforcing
this law. Including the sheriff of Riverside. Did you hear him? He just gave a wonderful speech.
We just interviewed him, too, and it was amazing.
That's right. Dave was telling me, Dave Stahl on the show right before us, he interviewed this sheriff. So,
in fact, all the sheriffs from all the counties surrounding San Diego County have said they're not going to enforce the law. Bill Gore.
Well, that makes me feel better about the fact that I shoot off my big mouth every Sunday night talking about this stuff. Did you hear that, sheriffs? We love the sheriffs. Love you, sheriffs.
Yes, but unfortunately, the San Diego County Sheriff, Gore, has said he is going to enforce it.
Hopefully he doesn't listen to the show.
So I've got to say, I hope that people remember that when he comes up for re-election. He's been there for a long time. I remember the last time he ran, it was against Sheriff Jim Roach. And, he's a very articulate guy. He has all the support of the establishment. But
Is this going to be a re-election like they had in Georgia, where they
who knows?
You're not allowed to stand and watch us count because of COVID? Is it going to be one of those kind of elections? Then it may not matter.
And Bob, what you just did is, you know, reach out to, if you have relationships with vendors or people, you know, reach out to them and say, hey, if you're doing something, we'll stand with you. I can tell you, I'm not going to mention anything, but my wife has a long-term relationship with somebody who did shut down originally, and they originally opened up, and they just said they'll have to drag my body out of my establishment before I do this. And she has said, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm going to be there.
We will not give out their name or business over the air. I would not do that to anybody.
Right. But yes, but reach out to people you know in small business. And then one thing I also do want to say is that we're ending up with sort of a two countries during these lockdowns. We have people that have secure income. Their income's not been impacted.
They can work at home.
Or they can work at home, or they're retired, then their income's not impacted.
And a lot of what I do, writing, research, I can do at home. I can teach on Zoom, but I still care about what happens to the country.
Right.
It's not just about me.
Right. And
I know you can work at home, Mike, but it's not just about us.
No, it's not just about us. You have people whose lives are being destroyed by these lockdowns. Their dreams are being destroyed. Kids are graduating from college with no prospects for jobs, or there's kids right now that were planning to go into their senior year that last year their team had positioned them to maybe have a championship year. That year has been destroyed. They'll never get that back. So, you know, everywhere you look, you can see this devastation. And so I want to say this. This lockdown is not compassion. It's one of the most callous and heartless things we've ever seen done and perpetrated on the population.
And yet they sold it as you don't care about saving lives if you don't want a lockdown.
Yeah, no, that is the doublespeak, that we've been hearing from the left all along. I mean, they are the ones committing acts of uncompassion, of callousness against people. I mean, and nobody seems to talk about what's happening to the people what the lockdowns are doing. You get a few articles here and there, but we don't have enough in the area of public officials talking about this. I think what we should have is we have some new county boards of supervisors coming in. I think it'd be a good idea if they did some hearings about what the lockdowns are doing to people. Bring in families, working families, and how these lockdowns have devastated
and
their children
the
and themselves.
Have the hearings on television so that people will know what the members of the county board heard.
You could certainly record them and have them available and do that. But yes, let's have hearings on that. See how families and the kids' education is being devastated. See how working families are now struggling because their kids are now at home. They have to be there. See how it is when you've got four kids and they need four computers and you're trying to coordinate that to do online learning. Yeah. It's insane.
Folks, the media has sold a lie. The economy on one side, lives on the other. No, there are lives on both sides and we're losing far more lives with the lockdown. Well, Mike, as always, it's a privilege to have you on. And I think National Review is privileged to have you, even if they're going down the tubes. I'm still glad there's somebody like you working with them. Folks, we will see you next week on The Bob Siegel Show.
The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.